Hello, this is Dr. Tamiko Faison, your host of Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to supporting and showcasing therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world. Our guest today is Dr. Jewel Dixon Clayton. Dr. Dixon Clayton is an associate professor in the Department of Occupational Therapy at UAB. She teaches coursework across the occupational therapy curriculum related to the occupations of adults and older adults, assistive technology, global health, and clinical education. She is a member of the American Occupational Therapy Association, the National Black Occupational Therapy Association, and the Alabama Occupational Therapy Association. Dr. Dixon Clayton has more than two decades of clinical experience as an occupational therapist with a primary focus on adult physical dysfunction and assistive technology. She holds specialty certifications in assistive technology from the Rehabilitation Engineering and Assistive Technology Society of North America. Her community-based practice centers on enhancing the wellness of incarcerated women and fulfilling the assistive technology needs of children with disabilities in Uganda. Prior to joining UAB in 2021, Dr. Dixon Clayton was an associate professor in the Department of Occupational Therapy at Alabama State University in Montgomery. Dr. Jewel Dixon Clayton, OTD, MPH, OTRL, ATP, FAOTA, I love reading all these initials, has been named the program director of the entry-level clinical doctorate program in occupational therapy at UAB. She becomes the very first person of color to be program director at UAB and OT. Welcome, welcome, Dr. Jewel Dixon Clayton.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Now, if you could just tell us about yourself, how you got all these credentials. Well, we'll get to the alphabets behind your name later. But if you could just tell us about yourself and how you got into OT.
I'm a native of Birmingham, Alabama. I kind of educated in Birmingham and my junior year in high school, an occupational therapist who actually came from UAB and was a Black female came to talk about occupational therapy. And it sounded very much like something that matched my interests at that time. And so my senior year, I got to do something called the Executive Internship Program, where I spent half of my day in high school, but the other half of my day, I got to shadow an occupational therapy assistant at that time at the Lakeshore Foundation. And so that began kind of solidifying my relationship with occupational therapy. And so I felt like that'd be a good career fit for me. At that same time, I had a really traumatic car accident my senior year, and I saw kind of how therapy helped me, though I didn't get OT, I got PT. But since I didn't get OT, I would use the things I learned watching the CODA practice. So I had a reacher and I'd rig things up so I could be independent in dressing. And I kind of really saw how I could use a little bit I knew about occupational therapy to help myself. And so I said, I really want a career that lends itself to serving people in this way. And so from there, I went to Tuskegee University, and that's where I got my undergraduate degree in occupational therapy. And that just began this journey. I'm so excited to be back in Birmingham because I feel very much a native daughter of this city. It's where my family is. I recently got married here. And so just excited to be home and to serve now UAB as their program director.
So did you know about OT before you heard this person come to the class and talk about it?
I never heard of occupational therapy before that. And I was kind of thinking maybe education, maybe healthcare, but I knew I wasn't necessarily a good fit for nursing from what I'd seen of that particular profession. So it kind of was a good marriage for me. It was teaching and it was healthcare, but it wasn't, you know, those traditional things that kind of women are directed in at that time. I'd even explored engineering, but that was not my fit. So it seemed to be just a good marriage of my skills.
Yeah, and also just demonstrates the importance of us going back and sharing with others, because there's still so many people who don't know Like, they've never heard of OT. I mean, even in 2023, high school students that I talk to have no idea what occupational therapy is too often than not.
I agree. And so when I have the opportunity to go to any high school, especially my high school, Ramsey High School, to talk about OT, that's just such a treasure for me, because I feel like maybe someone would hear about it from me and it could open up such an amazing career opportunity because OT is taking such good care of me. And so I want as many people to know about it, but see themselves in this career as possible.
Exactly. Exactly. We appreciate that. Okay. So you go into OT, you do OT on your own self, which is fascinating just to hear that.
That's his own story.
And you're like, okay, they only gave me PT, but I knew I could benefit from OT. And I've learned some things based on my observation and shadowing experiences. I'm going to do OT on myself. So you become an occupational therapy practitioner. And then you end up being in leadership all the way to like now being the first person of color who's a program director at UAB. Can you talk about this journey from, you know, being a practitioner to being a leader?
Well, it's been kind of I won't say accidental, because I think it was very intentional in kind of the grand scheme of things. But, you know, I've had my very first job at the county hospital. At that time, it was called Cooper Green. And I would see all these chronic illnesses. And I felt very equipped as an OT to meet that kind of immediate, really tertiary care. But I was like, these are chronic community-based issues that primarily impact people that look like me. Then I got to UAB, better access to resources, but still the same kind of chronic illnesses. And that gave me interest in public health. And so I got my master's in public health, kind of with the intention of stepping outside of OT for a little while, maybe go into the nonprofit sector, maybe do more management, but really wanting to kind of go, like really help communities. And so that opportunity combined with taking students and teaching is kind of how I end up getting to Alabama State, because I had some students from Alabama State and I began to have a relationship with their fieldwork coordinator. And she said, have you considered teaching? And I said, I have not really. I'm just trying to wrap up this MPH, you know, and just kind of maybe move in a different direction. She said, but you should. And so that was the first time the idea of moving into higher education beyond my time at Tuskegee re-entered my mind. And so kind of seeing how I could take my knowledge of public health to an educational opportunity, but still kind of keep that occupational therapy center, was kind of how I said, well, maybe I will see how I like being in higher ed, because I definitely always enjoy students. I like the mentoring. I like kind of imparting information to them and just kind of seeing them fall in love with OT in the way I have. But it was really very much starting over, because, you know, I kind of, you know, achieved a certain level of expertise as in inpatient rehab. When I moved into higher ed, I started as an instructor, because I had a master's and that was kind of the policy of that university. So I kind of started over again. And, you know, I kind of came in teaching very fundamental courses, but I could develop a community-based OT course. And so that's really where I got to kind of, you know, create this marriage between primary care, secondary care, tertiary care, the role of OT and how we really can impact the community in very meaningful ways. And so a lot of the leadership opportunity really came in the classroom, because I had a tremendous amount of freedom there. You know, I always said I might have to fund it, but you will allow me to do it. And so that's when we began to take students into Tutwiler Prison or Montgomery Work Release. That's when I could develop this international fieldwork experience in Uganda. And so I was really able to kind of start leading in academia within the context of these experiences I wanted to create for my students. And that was kind of parallel to working for our state association and our state licensure board. So I served as vice president there. Then I became the chairperson of our state board. So these things were happening kind of simultaneously, but really kind of leading in an OT way really happened in the classroom for me. That's kind of how I feel like it began. And it kind of expanded in a lot of ways from there.
And this person that spoke to you said, have you considered education? What do you think this person saw in you that made her know that you would be an excellent educator and leader in education? I'm saying this because sometimes we don't necessarily see it in ourselves and other people see it. So for our listeners who may be thinking that they could never teach or be in leadership, what do you think this person saw in you?
And I'll give her credit. Her name is Dr. Nikki Rain. She's still teaching now. And so the student had was having some challenges. And so I think she saw my ability to help the student navigate these challenges well within the context of this clinical environment and how those how that skill set could translate to the classroom. But I was kind of at the point where I was presenting at our state conference a little bit more. I was kind of spreading my wings into the profession. And so I hope that she saw the potential to do that very same thing as at that time, Alabama State was transitioning to the master's level. And so I'm very grateful that she planted that seed at that moment. It was probably a year later before I really kind of began the process of applying for the opportunity, but she definitely planted that seed at that time.
Yeah, it's such a great example that you can, you know, have everyday leadership skills and not necessarily this formal leadership title, but it can later translate into formal leadership positions because people take notice. You know, if you're doing something and you're doing it well, whether you have the title or not.
I think leadership always starts with service.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you serve well, if you serve people, if you love people, if you're passionate about things, that's noted. And sometimes you have to find a good balance there, especially for women. But leadership always begins with service. Service to our profession, service to our clients, service to our students. You know, we want to make something better. A lot of times we need to be in the position to impact change. And so that's why I'm so excited about being program director. Not because of the title. It's because I can be in a position to make some things better about this program and definitely and therefore impact our profession in a positive way. But I would say for me, leadership has always began with service, the opportunity to make something better at the level I could. And then when new doors opened, I was able to say, OK, I can parlay this skill set to this opportunity. OK, well, now I have this skill set. I can use it in another environment. But that's kind of been how my career is very much navigated.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's about service. It's not about the titles, the hand clapping and all that. That's just secondary to the service and commitment and passion that you have to impact other people, the profession. And so, yeah, it's just, it's interesting, you know, when we think about how some strive for the title and then others, you're not even seeking that and you get the title. So we're just celebrating with you. I can hear the passion in your voice when you started talking about being the program director and how excited it is to be able to take on that role and to be able to make even more impact than you've already made. Now, you are the very first person of color as a program director at UAB and in a profession that, you know, historically has and continues to have underrepresentation of people of color. Can you talk about how that has impacted you as an OT and as a leader?
Well, it began being their first African-American faculty. So when I came on board in 2021, I was aware of that. I came to UAB with a desire to grow. And so this is part of that. I don't know if I saw this specific opportunity, but I definitely did want to grow in that way as a leader. It's a diverse department, but they have not had a person of color to lead this particular program, which started in 1969. So I see it as an opportunity to just move the needle. I'm hoping I'm the first, but certainly not the last. You know, I hope this becomes the culture of our program, of our School of Health Profession, and that students see this is where I want to be. I want to be in environments where I see women leading, people of color leading, people of different ability levels leading, people from different backgrounds leading. And so if they can see that, they accept that, and that becomes kind of the gold standard for them. So that's really probably the most important thing. But I do hope it inspires students to go, if she is there, then I can get there. Because I had a great program director, Marie Moore Lyles. You know, she came from the Midwest to start that program at Tuskegee University. And she's kind of been my gold standard of what leadership looks like in the face of challenges. Because to come to rural Alabama in the 70s to start an OT program, the second one in the state at a HBCU, took a tremendous amount of courage. And so yeah. If I think about her doing that then, I think what a foundation she laid for me to kind of step into this opportunity of a well-established program who's never had this kind of leadership, but I believe very much ready for it. And I know I can kind of lead my own legacy here as well. And so I just hope this becomes the standard for them, you know, that they expect diversity. They advocate for diversity in whatever environments they find themselves in as students and then as new practitioners.
You know, Jewel, as you were talking, I was like, you're very optimistic. And I love the optimism in your responses. So I'm curious, obviously you've had challenges, but you focus more on solution and positivity and optimism in responding. What strategies do you use to overcome the challenges, like maybe anything you learned from your mentors or just how what suggestions and advice would you give for someone who's dealing with those challenges while still wanting to make that positive impact and be optimistic? Because some people don't stay and respond very differently when you ask about challenges, and the view can be very narrow, and I'm not judging anyone on that because people respond to challenges differently. But yeah, I'm just curious if you can share, what strategies do you use to deal with challenges?
I'm going to be honest with you. I believe I'm a person of faith. I don't take any of this journey lightly. And there have been challenges. There have been delays. You know, I've been an occupational therapist for 23 years. So this is my first opportunity that's been a good fit for me to lead in this way. So our delays can feel like the greatest challenge. It's like, when will I have my opportunity to use these skills, these gifts that God has given me, the things I've worked hard for, all these degrees, all these times I've served and maybe not been recognized? When will my opportunity come? And I believe that's just preparation for the right opportunity. And so I think it's faith. I think I have a great support system. You know, I believe from my grandmother as a child, my parents, my spouse, our family, my children, you know, I think there are people that really continually speak life into me and just believe that anything is possible. And so even when things are delayed because we need to focus on our family or focus on education or illness, whatever the case may be, even just our society and the many obstacles it places on people of color, yes, you have to still believe in purpose. And so my purpose is this. And so whatever obstacles come, I'm still going to move toward my purpose and believe with hard work, with faith, with skills, with perseverance, the obstacles are going to move out of the way. And so when I look back at my career, I go, okay, this was the impact I was supposed to make, because there's always going to be something. And so we have to decide how we're going to deal with that something and how we're going to move forward. But I do have this this quote sometimes that I say to myself when I'm going to a situation where I'm the only or I'm the first. I go, I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. So there is something about feeling like the ancestors are kind of cheering me on in this journey. There is something about that such a time as this, I get to step into this moment. There is something about providence and divine purpose that does kind of shore me up on the days when it is overwhelming, when it does seem like, are we moving the needle? Are we going in reverse? Because when we look at the numbers of students of color in OT, the numbers are worse than they were when I entered the profession in the 90s. And so there are some things we need to do differently, but I do remain very hopeful that the things that I'm doing right now will overall make this profession better. And also I'm walking in my purpose. You know, I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to do to kind of leave the legacy that I need to leave. So those are kind of things that kind of keep me encouraged on the journey.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And I again, as you're speaking, I mean, you speak in a way that makes me see certain images and visions. And so I'm just imagining in my mind, you just walking and knocking out every obstacle that comes your way with these 10,000 people behind you, cheering you on, and you just continuously moving forward toward a light, you know, fulfilling your purpose. So I appreciate that very vivid description. So what's next for you? You said you're excited about this new role and the impact. Do you have any particular goals that you want to share about, you know, what kind of impact you want to make, or even, you know, in the new in your new role as the OT program director, but also in other leadership roles? What's next?
So kind of one of the things that I really want to see in this role is that we expand to more international field work. That is probably the thing I'm probably most passionate right now, that we have international capstones, international field work, international service learning opportunities for our students, because I think it broadens your perspective so much. And we have the resources to support a diverse group of students having the opportunity. And so that's the thing I'm kind of championing. We went to South Africa last year. There's a plan to go again. No, this year. There's a plan to go again in 2024. Previous to coming here, I did some work in Uganda. And so I'm just excited about seeing people experience the continent of Africa the first time. But there are lots of places around the world that need to see OTs doing what we do well. And so really kind of cultivating those opportunities for students is kind of what I really want to see our program really expand in that direction. Of course, increase our diversity. Diversity from the perspective of ethnic and racial and more people of color, but also just more ability levels. I feel like I would like to see more of the people that we serve have an opportunity to be occupational therapists. And so how do we facilitate those kind of environments that really are accessible, that really are inclusive in that way? And so I really want to see our program, but really all programs, kind of be more accessible to all different kinds of students from different backgrounds, from that perspective as well. I am really looking for where I want to serve in the profession on kind of from a leadership perspective. I have been on the Educational Standards Review Committee for the past couple of years as we revise the ACOPE standards. And it's really been a unique opportunity to kind of impact that part of the profession, to take feedback and constructive, you know, from all of the stakeholders and really kind of use our expertise to revise these standards that really kind of will shape what OT education will look like for the next 5 years. So being a part of that opportunity is really kind of just stirred up a curiosity in me about where do I want to go next from a leadership perspective in OT education, kind of beyond just this program director role, but just kind of what my next steps are in that perspective. And there's also just, I've thought about entrepreneurship for years and what that could look like. How do I use my love of assist technology to kind of meet some more underserved needs in my community, whether it be my local community or my global community? So those are the kind of things I'm just passionate about right now, and just trying to see how all these things can fit together and kind of work with the time commitments I have and the resources I have and still be very impactful, because I'm always concerned about overcommitting and under-delivering. Mm-hmm. And so I want to keep that spirit of excellence across all of these new roles. And so how do I do that and still kind of have the other things I'm passionate about and serve my community and be responsive to my family and all these other things that are so important to me and still be very impactful? So that's what I'm trying to juggle with grace. That's kind of my juggling act. How do I do all the things and try to do most of it with excellence?
So. Yes, you're doing an excellent work. And all sounds really exciting. So how can we support you? You know, you can always call me if you want to talk about entrepreneurship. See, Jewel and I, we talk about calling each other by our first name after the introduction for listeners who might be concerned about titles. But we talked about this. So Jewel and I met in Paris and connected. Let me just over there to the side, just talking about whatever we could think of, from entrepreneurship to being in academia. You made a very, I'm not going to say exactly what it was, but you made a very impactful observation that was very helpful for me when we were at WFLT, you know, as a person of color. And I had never been out of the United States, Jewel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'd never been to another continent. And so it was a very different experience for me. My whole family went with me, my immediate family and then my sister's family. And so being able to connect with you and some other folks was very, you probably don't know how much it meant to me to be able to have some of the conversations that we had at WFOT. So I appreciate that. And we did talk a little bit about entrepreneurship. So I will always be available if you ever want to talk about anything related to entrepreneurship. But what else can we do to support you in your current and future roles and endeavors?
I think that's a great question. First of all, your reputation precedes you. So I knew who you were. And I've been looking forward to meeting you because our paths had never crossed before then. So I knew exactly who Tamika was. And so I was very excited to meet you because I just see all the things that you're doing. It is so exciting to see OTs in that entrepreneurship space thriving, you know, so that was kind of very exciting for me. How can you support me? Wow, that is such a great question that I don't get enough. I think in a very small way, I think encouragement. I am always seeking peer mentorship. In the sense of there are people that have great ideas that do things really well that may be at different levels that can offer those ideas to me. How did you navigate being the first or only in your space? I'm always looking for mentorship, encouragement, those kinds of things of how do people navigate this space well and walk in it with integrity and strength and courage. So I'm always looking for those kinds of opportunities to have those kind of conversations about resiliency and just how do you do this thing very well? So that's probably one way that I think anyone could support me that has this kind of passion and interest. Can we have this kind of peer support, peer mentorship, relationship develop from that? And then just opportunities where you feel like I could serve and shine. I'm always looking for those as well.
Excellent. Well, when you said that about peer mentorship, I was just thinking about in North Carolina, we have at least 3 Black OT program directors and 2. So UNC Pembroke, which has a new OT program, it's a brand new OT program. They have a Black OT program director. And then Pfeiffer has, I think, the first Black OT program director. So, and I know both of them, so I'd be happy, you know, if they're willing to make a connection. And then for our listeners, if you know others who, like she said, are the first in their role, reach out. How can they find you, Jewel? What would be the best way for them to get in?
Email jdixon@uab.edu is probably the most effective way. I'm on LinkedIn. It's my last name. It's my name, Jewel Dixon Clayton. I also have a Facebook page, Jewel Dixon Clayton. So if you just Google my name, you can find me in those 3 places.
Okay, and we'll put those in the show notes as well. Any last pearls of wisdom or a quote that you would like to leave the audience with?
It's been about leadership. I've been thinking a lot about leadership lately, and I found that very often leaders have blind spots. Kind of if you're driving in a car and if you don't adjust your mirrors, if you try to move from lane to lane, you can almost hit someone because you can't see someone there. And I feel like this journey of leadership can look the same way. You know, you're moving in this space, and if you're not always kind of adjusting your mirrors to kind of see what's on either side of you, what areas am I missing? You can have some leadership collisions or just not lead well. And so I just really, for myself and just anyone in position of leadership, have people around you that can speak to you in very honest ways and identify your blind spots. Identify areas where you're maybe not the strongest, or you're missing things, or you're missing opportunities. Maybe you're not being as equitable as you need to be. And that way you can grow as a leader, but also be very effective. Because that's kind of, I think, the legacy that most leaders want, to be very effective, to be very compassionate. And so just having someone to identify those blind spots in our lives, whether it's in leadership or any other areas that are meaningful for us, I think that's the thing I've been kind of focusing on for myself. But I wanted to just share that with anyone else kind of in these spaces of leadership. Have someone that sees your blind spots so they can tell you how you need to adjust your mirrors.
That's great advice. And then once you hear about those, you got to be receptive.
Be receptive.
Be receptive. They tell you like, that, I don't do that. You got to like, yes, okay, let me reflect and adjust, like just like you said, adjust that mirror. And so thank you so much. That is our show for today. Jewel, this has been a blessing to hear from you. You know, I do these shows to showcase and support therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color, but I always get something out of each show and just feel full, supported, and encouraged from having a conversation with you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow. Until next time.